Okay, very good. I think most people are in now. There's always a few places at the front here. So, I do have a topic for this evening's Dhamma talk from something which happened during the week. But to introduce it, I know that there are many people who come here who haven't come from Buddhist cultures, people who come and they're interested in these talks, and they wonder just what are the rituals you are supposed to do, what are the do's and do nots, especially in front of monks or nuns, because you're already kind and you're trying to be sensitive, and the last thing you want to do is to offend somebody, because you know that these are rituals and customs which you know, you haven't grown up with, and the last thing you want to do is to upset people you care about and love and respect. But I often tell people, basically you can do just about what you want, because of all people in this world, I like to think that monks and nuns are the hardest people to offend. They really have to try hard to offend a monk. And if you succeed, it's not your fault, but it's the monk's fault. For being offended. But this is my training as being a monk, and the reason is, there was a very great saying of Ajahn Chah's, which, you know, when I thought of this talk, I hadn't said this saying for such a long time, for years even, and it's the reason why, you know, it's very hard to offend a good monk or a good nun. And the reason is that, you know, if you do say something and I get upset, it's my fault. You can't blame other people for what they say or what they do, because this idea of blaming others is totally, it's not Buddhist at all. And the saying which Ajahn Chah taught me is that when you have some sort of irritation, some pain, someone annoys you, if you blame other people, he said it's like having an itch on your head and you scratch your bum. If you have an itch on your head and you scratch your bottom, the itch on the head does not go away, and you have another itch as well on your bottom. It's the wrong thing. When I blame somebody else for any hurt, any pain, any dissatisfaction which I feel inside, if that itch is on my head, that's where I have to scratch. So if I am hurting, this is where I have to look and see and heal my own hurt rather than blaming somebody else. If you're hurting and you think it's somebody else's fault and you try and fix up the fault by fixing up somebody else, that is scratching in the wrong place. That is what my teacher meant by having an itch on your head and scratching your bum. And he just had a beautiful way, a course, yes, but a very beautiful way of putting things. So that is why after all this training for many years, you know, you just don't get offended when people do things to you. And even the reason I'm saying this is because you know my character. I do tell jokes every now and again. And there's always, it seems, somebody somewhere, every joke I say, there's always somebody looks at that joke and instead of laughing at it, they take it seriously and take offense. So, for those of you here last week, remember the joke I said about the bikey? Fortunately, thank goodness, thank the Buddha, the bikies weren't offended. Otherwise, I'd be in big trouble. But somebody said that they were offending the cross-dressing, the gay and lesbian community, transgenders. Because it was if you remember the bikey, I'll just say it very quickly if you weren't here last week. the bikey gang going down the highway, they saw a big crowd, the bikey wanted to sort of be a hero, tried to sort of get some good publicity for bikies. They're not all bad. And actually, just on the side there, that once... Once there was a mother of a bikie, the poor young man, drove a bit too fast and he slammed into a electricity pole and killed himself. And he was very, very young, and I knew the mother, she would come to our monastery. And so she wanted my support at the funeral for her son. And she was a very spiritual person, and she thought that she could handle doing the funeral service for her own son. And it was in Fremantle, many years ago, at the old little funeral chapel. Now, they've built new chapels since that time. It was small. And because this was a bikie who had died, they had all these bikies crammed into this little hall. And I don't know why this is, but you know, they were all in their leathers, their tats, everything, their patches, and they had their girlfriends. And their girlfriends, this was a funeral, but they were, quite frankly, dressed like they were going to go out to a nightclub. You know, young, you know, really well-dressed and stuff like that, because this is just bikie culture. It was their way of paying respect to one of their own. And the mother went up there to try and conduct the funeral ceremony for her son, but you know, it became impossible for her. She started losing it, and I remember her sort of calling out, "There's a professional in here somewhere. Brahm, help!" So I came and just impromptu did the funeral service for her son, who I also, you know, met a couple of times. And I remember just after the funeral service, all these bikies, these tough guys, you know, really big, incredibly big arms and tough, they all came up to me and said, "Thank you, sir. Very nice funeral. Great service, sir. Thank you so much." They're so nice and so kind. You can see they really felt something for their, you know, their brother, you know, their friend who had passed away. And I was, you know, when you actually get to know people, they have all this bad reputation sometimes. We judge them far too rationally. And some of them can be really, really kind. So anyway, despite what sort of people say about them, obviously there are some bad ones, but there's also some good ones. You can't judge, this is what I'm trying to say. But anyway, in this story, you know, the bikie tried to do something good, and then this girl trying to jump off the bridge, and the bikie sort of came up to the girl, kissed her, and it was very quickly. And everyone thought, great, great idea to stop her from jumping off. And then afterwards he asked, why were you wanting to jump off? And she, or you might say he, said, "Because my parents don't like me dressing up in girls' clothes." And you know, the bikie was tricked. You know, he got it wrong. He misperceived. And that was a joke. But why is it that sometimes people can look at a story like that and find offense? Now, that's the point which, you know, when I heard that people had found offense at that, then I thought, this, you know, there's something which is missing here, which I should talk about. And at the same time, last week, I also got a letter, and this was from a woman in England, because while I was in England, and 2 or 3 weeks ago, I told the other joke, which is, most people laugh at these jokes, and I can't find out, you know, I do know now, but I want to sort of, why people get offended at these jokes. And that was the one about the person who, the two old men joke. Very quickly, because you should remember it, because if you weren't here, I'm sure your friends have told you about it, because it's, you know, it's one of the good ones. Even the bad ones, you tell your friends about it anyway. And that was the two old men. One was 86, one was about 84. They meet together in the park and they share their lunch together. And one day the elderly man, 86, never turned up. He never turned up for a whole month. His friend thought he must have died. And after 1 month, his friend came back and said, "I thought you died. Where have you been?" And his friend said, "I've been in jail." "Jail? At your age, 86? What happened?" And the story was, I don't mean to offend anybody, but the story was, because I'm saying this so you can, part of the understanding about offense, he said, "The girl who serves us coffee sometimes in the shop, she accused me of rape. And when I went to trial and the judge read out the charge, I was so flattered at 86, I decided to plead guilty." "I was so flattered, I decided to plead guilty." Now, men know that joke, because 86-year-old, it means that 86-year-old to have sex is very hard. Any sex. "And the judge gave me 30 days for lying in court." Now, of course, the people who hear these talks, there'll be always, because there's thousands of people actually listen to these talks, there'll be some of them who are victims of rape, who have been raped, or maybe have been raped and they weren't believed, you know, in court, or whatever. But that is not the point, you know, of the story. Of course, those are never my intentions, and I apologize to anybody who thinks that's the intention. I don't want to hurt anybody, and I'm sorry you take it the wrong way. But the point of this particular talk this evening is, why do people always take a story which many people can laugh at, and you can see the funny side of it, but why do we actually choose to find fault with it and see the negative side and actually not be able to laugh at ourselves? And too often in our modern world, not being able to laugh at ourselves and just the stupidity of our own lives is a great cause for emotional imbalance, the lack of the opportunity to see happiness in our life, the refusal to actually to find joy, almost the fear of actually finding happiness in the weirdest of places. I did read books about places like Auschwitz, where even in Auschwitz, people who were about to die would actually tell jokes in the morning time. And they would find fun anywhere. And that was, to me, when I read that from people who had survived those terrible camps, and they said this is what happened there sometimes, you saw that just how human beings can have fun as almost like a rebellious refusal to allow other people to take away their happiness, even in the most dire situations. And that is how I was taught as a young monk. Your happiness is never to be controlled by other people. They may try to offend you. They may try to irritate you, even if they have intentions to do that. And of course, Buddhist monks don't have those intentions. But if you do have an intention to offend someone, you have the choice. And don't let other people take that choice away from you. Remember, you have the choice to be offended or to laugh, to shrug it off, to make something funny of it. You have that choice all the time. Examples, the times when people try to offend me. There's a story which I wrote in Opening the Door of Your Heart, the first volume, from the time I first came to Western Australia 31 years ago. Now imagine a Buddhist monk 31 years ago, where the people here in Perth, it was a redneck town. It was... Now, don't be offended, come on. They'd never seen Buddhist monks before, so they didn't know who we were. So I remember clearly we had our little centre in Magnolia Street, North Perth, and I was helping loading up the van to take some building material down to our monastery in Serpentine. We built that place. We did it very hard. And I was on the weekend loading up the van, and a little girl, she must have been about 12 or 13, from the house next door, she was visiting probably her grandmother, who was Italian, visiting her, and she came out and saw me. And she came right up to me and put her hands on her hips, looked me up and down with as much disgust as she could, you know, manage to arouse in her demeanor. Looked me up and down and said, "You're dressed like a girl. That's sick." Now she had a point. You know, people didn't know what monks' robes were like in those days, and so she was really trying to offend me. And of course, I had a choice to get embarrassed, you know, to get angry, or to laugh. And you know which one I chose. I thought it was so funny. And that totally disabled her animosity when I laughed instead of getting upset and angry. Because it's amazing just how when you laugh at abuse, it doesn't affect you. And also, it teaches people to stop using those ways of trying to hurt others or to control them. There's been many other times. I remember, because I laugh at myself and I don't just... Why is it that we get offended? There's a lot of sense of ego, pride, you know, a little bit of fear of accepting ourselves and our life for what it is. I remember one time just after... it was after a talk, just standing in the reception area there, And this, I think a Chinese girl came through, middle-aged, and she took one look at me. And she was just a visitor to this center. She hadn't been here before. She didn't know who I was. Took one look at me and started rubbing my belly for good luck. Was I offended? No, it actually felt quite nice. You had the choice there to laugh or to get offended. And I refused to get offended. And even jokes. You know, sometimes the jokes, and people say, well, it's, you know, telling a joke about sort of a bikie or a cross-dresser or old men. Sort of, what about monk jokes? And you've heard me. I'm going to repeat a joke that many of you have heard so many times, but it's good because it's very short. Now, what fun does a monk have? Answer? None. Now, you could be very offended by that, but saying, because we're good monks, you know, we don't mess around. We don't have hanky-panky in the monastery in the Saturday night. You know, the nuns are in the nuns' monastery, the monks are in the monks' monastery. You've seen us for many years. We actually keep our rules. We're good monks. So we can say a story like that, and we can laugh at it. We can see the funny side of it. You know, what fun does a monk have? None. It can be N-O-N-E, means you don't have any sex, you can't watch movies, all that sort of stuff which you have fun with. So monks don't have that. They have no fun. What fun does a monk have? None. N-O-N-E. But it also means, you know, N-U-N, the female monks. Yeah, we know what you get up to. So it can be very offensive if a person chooses to take offense. But we decide not to. Because we realize that you cannot control what other people say. But you can control how you hear. So this particular concept, you may have read some Buddhism about Eightfold Path. You know, what the right view, right intention, right speech, right action. This is almost like a ninth factor, right listening. Because sometimes that we look at what we do as far as talking to one another, as our actions, this is the law of karma. Many Buddhists are very good at trying to keep their precepts, always being kind. But when it comes to listening, we don't realize there is a right way of listening. A wise, compassionate way of listening to what other people say. And when I start to point that, similar to one of the factors of the Eightfold Path, right listening, it opens up a whole area where as human beings we can learn, we can train, we can be aware to solve a lot of the difficulties and problems in our life. Have you ever noticed that sometimes when we're listening, number one, we're not listening with full attention, so we miss a lot of the information. We just jump to conclusions. When we jump to conclusions, it's called like judging somebody. He said that joke, you know, he is trying to demean gays. He's trying to demean old people. Now this is where we're not doing right listening. Because we're not really listening with an open mind. It's almost prejudging. When it comes to right speech, one of the things the Buddha said, before you speak, you must always not speak if you've got a mind of ill will. If you're angry at someone, just keep quiet because you always make a mess of things if you speak with anger. Buddha always said, always speak with kindness. Develop that kindness first of all before you even open the mouth. Even if you're telling somebody off, you're telling somebody off, like I'm a boss monk, I'm an abbot, I've got to train the monks and nuns and other people, and if I have to point out a fault in someone, I make sure I haven't got any ill will or revenge, and I'm not trying to hurt anybody, I have to do it in a way which is kind and compassionate. And so I have to establish that with the other person first of all, you know, to speak kindly to them, find the right time and place, and then I kindly say to them, look, you know, you're not, when you're meditating, you're snoring. You know, it's, try and get some more sleep, you know. Or, you know, if you're sort of, you know, here we've got the room next door, you can listen to the talk in there, meditate there. If you snore, no one will hear you, or whatever. But, you know, you do it in a kind way. You don't say, if you snore once more, you're out of here, you'll be blacklisted, and I'll beat you up, and I'll get my bikey friends. Oh, they will come and talk to you. Now, if you say things like that, what's going to happen? You know, the whole idea of why you're trying to help somebody, you know, just not snoring when they're meditating, they will just go away. They won't get the lesson. They will just think that you're a crazy monk who's just really mean and nasty. But if you actually speak with kindness, there's a good chance that that person will understand, you know, there is a problem there, and will make some sort of actions or some effort to try and solve the problem. And you can help them solve the problem with some, you know, some help, some advice or something. And now, the same way we speak to another person, that's actually how we should listen to them as well. Listen to them with kindness. I mentioned this in passing last week, that how we are so judgmental to a person, if a person does say something, it's so easy to take offense because basically we expect them to be hurting us or harming us. And even if they do say something which we find offensive, please give them the benefit of the doubt. We may not have really understood them. Or maybe they said something that's not what they really meant. Have you ever said one thing and you meant another? It happens to me all the time. You know, sometimes I say some smart things. I remember saying, you should be in the present moment. And by mistake I said, pleasant moment. And I thought, wow, that's really fine. That's really a good idea. And there's other times you say the wrong word and, you know, people start laughing. You know, when I mentioned in Thailand when I was trying to learn Thai language and I had to ask my teacher if I needed anything and I needed some soap, and the word which came out of my mouth was not the Thai word for soap, it was a Thai word for pineapple. And so I asked my master for a pineapple. And he looked at me very, very confused, and he asked, I could understand, what do you want a pineapple for? And I said, to wash. And he never made it. And just the word came out wrong. I was just learning a new language. And even now, sometimes, because, you know, you're talking, you may be tired, the words come out wrong, and you don't really mean that. You know, what is it here, Dunny? He's here today. Our marriage celebrant, Dennis. Is he here today, Dennis? No, he's not here today. Good. I can get away with this then. You know, his former wife, you know, because he's a marriage celebrant. You know, he went home one day and he said, oh, I'm marrying your friend Janice tomorrow. And his wife said, you're married to me. You can't be marrying my best friend. He said, look, I'm doing her marriage ceremony. I'm marrying your best friend tomorrow. I'm the marriage celebrant, okay? And just his wife laughed because, you know, for one moment she'd heard what he said, but she wasn't doing right listening, and she thought that he was going to marry somebody else. It was like another another man's wife here. No, he was a Burmese Buddhist married to this English girl. No, he died some time ago. He's really a great guy. You know, for those of you who know, remember Keith Sword, one of the early members of our Buddhist society. His wife told me that, you know, she was looking in the cookery book, and she found a recipe which had, I think it was lamb's brains as part of the recipe. She thought she'd try that on her husband. And so she went to the shop, butcher's shop, went up to the counter, looked at the guy and said, have you got any brains? And the person selling the meat got offended. I want brains for the stew or whatever I'm cooking. I don't mean to offend you. But how many... She told me the story and I burst out laughing. How many times has that happened to you? You know, it's not that, you know, you've meant to offend anybody, or it's, you know, sometimes you say the wrong word, you're in a rush, or you screw up your words, whatever it is. And sometimes you get into a big mess. Oh, what's that other one about cricket? Oh no, maybe. Okay, I'm started now. Please don't get offended because this was on the BBC. So you can you get offended? Because there was a cricket commentator called Johnston. Was it Bill Johnston? I forget now, but it's a very famous. He died now. And he was commenting on a cricket match between the West Indies and England. And the bowler for England who was doing the over was a fellow called Willie. And the very great West Indian batsman, Michael Holding. And he actually said this on BBC radio. The batsman's Holding, the bowler's Willie. And it was totally misunderstood. And I think all the people who usually are very bored with cricket found out it was a very interesting game. Now, why is it that people find offence at those things? We can laugh that we all make mistakes, but sometimes what happens is that for some reason some people want to find fault. And that's a fascinating thing which I see in our people today. There's an inherent negativity in life that instead of giving people the benefit of the doubt, we always try to judge them in a bad way. Has that happened to you? It happens to me. And it's very unfair. Because I know it's happened to me, and I know it's unfair, that I know what it feels like. I'm very mindful, reflect upon it, and I don't want to ever do that to other people. So if you do anything or say anything, I will always give you the benefit of the doubt. That I've either misunderstood what you meant to say, or you didn't realise, like that cricketer Johnston, that BBC cricket commentator Johnston, he didn't realise what he was saying. It was just an obvious mistake. We do make mistakes. I allow people to make mistakes. I allow myself to make mistakes, but I don't make a big deal about it. Because the Buddhist way is AFL. Actually, I'm going to change that now. AFLL. When you make a mistake, you acknowledge it. You don't hide it and say it never happened. You forgive it. So you don't get upset about it. You don't try and punish other people. You don't make a big deal about it. You forgive about it. Forgive it. And the next thing is you learn about it. AFL. But the other L in there, which I'm putting in today, you acknowledge, forgive, laugh, and learn. Because life is sometimes so ridiculous, so funny. It always gives me so many opportunities, you know, for humour, to laugh. And we all know that's one of the reasons you come here. Not to listen to the Dharma, but to have a good laugh on a Friday night. Look, you've been at work all week, 5 days with bosses who never laugh. And you come here, just have a good laugh on a Friday night, sets you up for the week, you go home happy. But there's a good reason for that. You know, that laughter is good for your health, and laughter is always usually seeing the human condition and not taking it so seriously, which means your life is not so heavy anymore. You can go out having had a good laugh, realizing whatever's happening in life is not that bad as you thought it was. It sees it in a much more sane, happy, light-hearted perspective. It's not such a big deal anymore. And sometimes to see the way that people overreact to the things which happen in life, and I cannot remember, I was talking about this to somebody the other day, when people are talking about terrorism and saying that people are so afraid that, you know, there may be a terrorist attack in London or New York or any other place they happen to be visiting. You know, because I wasn't in Ottawa, I just moved out of Ottawa when they had a terrorist attack in Canada recently. You know, it wasn't me. But you know, people are afraid of terrorist attacks, and I don't know why people are so afraid. Because, you know, my parents, especially my mother and her grandparents, they were in London during the Second World War, during what was called the Blitz. And this wasn't just one bomb going off, you know, once a year. This was thousands of bombs going off every night, one night after another, after another, after another, after another. And those of you who've been to see, you know, the small terraced houses in London, you know, where the house was only maybe about, what, maybe not 10 meters, maybe 6 meters wide, and then the next house and the next house, you know, poor people's houses. And even one night, the house next door got a direct hit from a bomb. The neighbors who just lived on the other side of the wall were instantly killed. And my mother had her arm gashed by flying glass. No, she survived, otherwise I wouldn't be here. That was how close she got. And they just learned how to live with that. I remember one story of a couple who they'd been up for so many nights with the sound of these bombs going off and many people they knew, you know, being obliterated or being very seriously injured. Thousands of people every night for months. And they decided, the air raid siren went off and they said, no, that's it. We're going to stay in our own bed tonight and we're going to have a sleep. So even though there was bombs going off all over the place, they decided, no, we're going to stay in bed. And they had a good sleep. And they woke up in the morning, and they were okay. Bang, 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 boom, all night long. They were so tired, what the hell, we're going to have a sleep. And they had a beautiful deep sleep. They felt so good afterwards. You know, doubly good, because they were alive afterwards. But that was the nature of people in those days. Now, even bombs wouldn't make them sort of afraid. They got used to it. It's incredible. Sometimes we've lost that resilience in these days. We're so afraid of even one bomb. And people, apparently one of our members who was here, you know, during that time, most of these people are dead now. You know, he, a New Zealander, you know, he escaped from a prisoner of war camp in Europe, apparently the first New Zealander to actually escape. He came back over to UK. He was in London the first time he heard an air raid siren. And, you know, he was in uniform, he was a soldier. And as soon as he heard the air raid siren, he ran for an underground station. When he realized that him and his soldier mate were the only two running into the station, everyone were going around their business as normal. And he felt so embarrassed that the two soldiers were the only ones showing any fear. And everyone else, and people at the bus stop reading their newspaper, people just walking, chatting to each other, women were doing their shopping. And he thought, wow, these people are not afraid. And they were so impressed with that attitude. And that's something which I like to have. Don't be afraid or be offended or be scared of life. Now face it. Because if you get controlled by fear, if you get controlled by what other people say, what other people threaten to do, you are losing your independence. You don't need to be so controlled. You have the choice. Never allow others to control your own happiness. I wrote that in the book, it's one of my sayings. And it was that saying, above all, which really impressed, you know, the former Premier of Western Australia, Jeff Gallop. He keeps on saying, that really helped me. You know, through his depression and through, you know, some of the politics. Imagine being a politician, a leader. You're always going to say something, do something which offends people. People don't like it. They're upset at you. And even in the newspapers. Imagine, I know, I look at the comics and the newspapers and, you know, see the cartoons, the political cartoons, and they're really gross. And I can imagine, how can a politician endure all of that? And he had a hard time enduring that until he learned, you know, from me, don't allow others to control your happiness. They can call you all sorts of names. They can try and abuse you, they can try and offend you, but you have the final choice. To accept the abuse, or just laugh, drop it and let it go. 2 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, every Saturday morning, like tomorrow morning, the monks would be going on a traditional alms round. We just walk around the streets, you know, the usual same route, to receive, you know, alms food from, you know, with our bowls, like in Thailand, like in Burma, like in Sri Lanka. From some people, they expect us. It's a bit of a Mickey Mouse arms round, but it works, and it's very nice. And anyway, the last time I went on arms round, this young Aussie guy saw us, and gave me the one finger sign. Now they gave you know the one finger sign. I'm not going to demonstrate it here. Otherwise, you may think that I'm doing this on purpose rather than just a demonstration for educational purposes. So they gave me the one finger sign. So there you had a choice again, to be offended or to laugh or to even see if you can perceive it in a positive way. So I looked upon that and saying, what he was really saying, but he just got the finger the wrong way around, that we were number one. Buddhism is the best. So that's where you have the choice, and I exercise that choice not to get offended and interpret it. I mean, it's very unlikely that that was actually the truth, but it could have been. That is actually our choice. And all the times you get offended in your life, how does that hurt you? It causes you pain. People think about that for days afterwards, sometimes for months and years. We take offense far too easily. And it's not a very wise thing to do. So give people the benefit of the doubt. See if you can change your perceptions to look at it in a different way, rather than, you know, somebody taking that offense. Because as soon as you take that offense, that person, if they did it on purpose, they've won. They've upset you. They've caused you pain. And that guy gave me the one finger sign. That's what he wanted to do. I'll show those stupid people. He wanted to cause offense. And when you don't receive offense, people stop giving it to you. They stop trying that on again. Because what's the point of trying to offend someone who just is unoffendable? You just can't do it, which means you give up. And also you respect that person even more. And one of the other little stories, which is a beautiful one for if someone offends you again and again and again, you know, to let it go, to shrug it off. Remember that story of the donkey who fell into the well? If you don't know that story, here it comes again. Donkey falls into a well. Fortunately, the well is dry. Now, this was the original story, Donkey Falling into the Well. In opening, I know that Good, Bad, Who Knows book, I changed that to a politician falling in the well. So you can see that, you know, it's the same story, but just, you know, changing it around a bit. This is Donkey Falling into the Well, the original. Donkey falls into a well, the well is dry, the donkey is fine, doesn't break any bones, but a donkey can't climb. So the donkey is stuck down the bottom of the well. And what does the donkey do? If he stays down there, he'll die. So started screaming for help. Ee-oh! 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 And he was doing this for such a long time. Now, anyone who's got a donkey, and I know that donkeys don't really sound like that, please don't get offended. I'm trying my very best to do donkey sounds. And if a donkey is listening, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to offend you. Ee-oh! And this donkey was going like that for over an hour. When a farmer heard this strange noise coming from the bottom of a well, the farmer came, looked into the well, he saw the donkey down the bottom. Now this farmer was a very bad man. You know, he's a really sort of bad character. And he never liked that donkey. And he said, "Serve you right, stupid donkey." And then he thought he had an idea. He said, "That is a dangerous well. Now I could fall down there, or some of my friends could fall down there. That needs to be filled in. So why not fill it in with that stupid donkey down the bottom?" So he got out a spade and started shoveling earth right into the well with the donkey at the bottom. And this donkey, when, you know, the earth was going on the donkey's back, the donkey didn't understand. "Isn't the farmer going to help me? What's he doing?" And after about 10 or 12 shovelfuls of soil over the donkey realized what the farmer was up to. He was trying to bury me alive. "Ee-oh! Ee-oh! Ee-oh!" At the top of his voice. He was very upset. But just shouting back on a person like that farmer, what did the farmer do? Just shovels even faster. Because when you're hurting a person deliberately and a person shows that hurt, it encourages you. So that farmer kept on shoveling faster and faster. Yeah, I'm going to kill that stupid donkey. And then the donkey eventually went quiet. And the farmer thought, I buried him. Serves him right. So he relaxed a bit and he shoveled a bit slower. But he hadn't buried the donkey. The donkey had got what in Buddhism we call insight. Insight meditation, even donkeys do that. What insight is, you see the problem and realize getting angry doesn't solve anything. Shouting, getting offended, that's not a solution. That makes things worse. So instead of getting angry and being offended, instead of having an itch on his head and scratching his bum, you know, blaming somebody else, look where the itch is and do something about it rather than trying to get somebody else to change. What can he do? Very simple, thought the donkey. The next shovelful of earth over his back, the donkey just shrugged it off. Stamped it in. Another shovelful of earth, shrugged it off. Stamped it in. Every shovelful of earth, the donkey was a centimeter higher. Another centimeter higher. And that farmer, you know, he thought he killed the donkey. So he was just unmindfully, not paying any attention to anything, shoveling the earth into the hole, not really seeing that a donkey's head was appearing above the well, not seeing the whole donkey's body, until the donkey was high enough he could jump out of the well and escape. But according to the story as I heard it, that before the donkey ran away, he bit the farmer on the backside to teach him the lesson, when you're shoveling, you should always watch your ass. No, ass, A-double-S. Okay. But the main part of that story, the main part of the story is a very beautiful one. When people abuse you, if you can, shrug it off. Stamp it in. And you're higher. Closer to escape. You are bigger, greater for what you're doing. So when people do abuse you on purpose, just shrug it off. One finger sign. Yeah, give me the other one. Come on. Shrug it off, stamp it in. Don't get offended. And you are stronger. Not only are you showing that abuse doesn't work in this world, but you're not getting upset. And because you're not getting upset, you're finding solutions to the difficulties and problems in life. Simple thing like that. So, the story, what we're talking today is acknowledge, forgive, laugh and learn for whatever happens. Don't get upset. You don't need to get upset no matter what another person does. Obviously, if there is serious abuse, I mean real abuse, people are hurting you, beating you, really sort of using verbal abuse long term, then obviously just shrugging it off is not the right thing. You have to seek professional help. You know, leave if somebody's giving you domestic violence. You know, or if there is somebody just attacking you, you know, with a knife or with a baton or with a taser, you don't just, shrug it off. No, just run like hell, call for help, whatever. So please don't misunderstand. I'm talking about the usual minor abuse which people actually don't need to take offense at, and they take offense and it just makes the world just such a difficult place. Sometimes we take offense so easily and that we lose all our friends. We lose nice people and we don't want to come to a place anymore because we feel that we've been offended. Or why do people take that offense and they keep it in their hearts for such a long time? It doesn't make any sense at all to me. The last little story with offense. In the end, if somebody did mean it, or they did say something wrong, please remember the old two bad bricks in the wall story. You know, that's the first story in opening the door of your heart, the most famous story of all which I've concocted. It's a famous story because it is really helped most people most of the time in all their walks of life. Quickly, building Bodhinyana Monastery 31 years ago, I had to do it myself, laying the bricks. First brick wall, two bricks were crooked. I was really careful, I tried to make sure I'd looked at every brick. Two bricks were crooked. And when they were crooked, I saw them at only the very end. I never saw them at the time. I couldn't know why I missed those things. They've spoiled the whole wall. I tried to scrape out the mortar to reset them. It was solid. I couldn't take them out. I asked the other monk, Ajahn Chah, I actually did this. Can we please buy some dynamite? I want to blow the wall up so I can start again. But we couldn't afford that. 3 months, roughly, I was suffering because of those two bad bricks. And I did actually have nightmares. Waking up in the morning, you know what it is when you make a mistake, you wake up, oh gee, what did I do wrong? Because everyone could see it, all the visitors. And so I was so upset. And it took me 3 months when a visitor saw that wall and they said it was a beautiful wall. And I said, are you blind, visually impaired, left your glasses in the car? Can't you see those two stupid bad bricks? And they said, yes, I can see the two bad bricks, but I can also see the 998 perfect bricks as well. And oh, crikey, why couldn't I have seen that before? I was a blind one. I was visually impaired, because all I could ever see is my two mistakes. Because I'd only see my two mistakes, every day when I went past that wall, my eyes would go to the two bad bricks. And I thought about it, I thought of my two bad bricks, I dreamt about it, two bad bricks. I needed someone to point out there were 998 perfect bricks. And it was a good wall. And that's just like someone upsets you. Why is it they say one thing which upsets you and you don't want to live with them anymore? Why is it two bad bricks, you want to destroy relationships, you want to destroy a wall, you want to destroy even coming to this center because the monk says two bad jokes? What about the 998 other bad jokes? So when you understand the two bad bricks story, you don't take offense that easily. You know, we can forgive, acknowledge, forgive, learn. And the last part of it, every wall has bad bricks in it. Every human being is imperfect. We always say things, and sometimes the more things we say, and I say a lot of things because that's my job, sooner or later you're going to put your foot in your mouth. You're going to say something which is wrong, which upsets a person, which is, you know, not what a Buddhist monk should say, so please forgive me. Because I'm a human being as well, just like you are. And I will forgive you, no matter how many bad bricks you have. Because I have trained myself, and I've never allowed myself to be upset at people. But to see people and love them for who they are. Stupid, crazy, arrogant, full of yourselves, stingy, whatever it is. But I still love you. Okay. You're not that bad, for goodness sake. So just one of the things is, in Buddhist psychology, in Buddhist cosmology, you know, the idea of rebirth and different planes of existence, the human realm is a very high plane. You know, this is the way the Buddhists, you know, believe, you know, all the different places you can be reborn. This is a very high plane, human beings. So I always remember that, and when I look at human beings, even the beings, you know, your bikies, when you go to the bikie funeral, the people you know, you see, the bricklayers who come rough as diamonds but hearts of gold. All these people you see, just I respect everybody. I honestly do. And because I can see the beauty in a human being, which is a high state of existence, it's not that hard to see. Yeah, you got a few bad bricks. This is not the heaven realm, they're not the top of the tree, but it's good enough. And so you love everybody for who they are. And when you can do things like that, it's so easy to forgive. So easy not to get offended. Because when you do stupid things, I just remember the stupid things I've done. And I say, welcome to the human race. Thank you for being a friend. That's the talk. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so we've got some questions, hopefully overseas or somewhere else. Any questions from here? Yes, over there. Can I have the microphone? Faster, faster. Over there too. Wow, we've got lots of questions. There's one over here, one over there. The microphone's going that way. There's questions here. Okay, from the floor first of all. Yes?
This is a true story.
Good.
And this is before the days of the mobile phone.
Yeah.
I know a real transvestite, a young
yes.
man who dresses up as a woman. And he was all dressed up one night, ready to go out. And his car broke down. And it was no one around, of course, no mobile phones. And he didn't know what was wrong. And he was scared that, you know, that he'd get attacked or that the police would charge him if they saw him. You know, dressed up as a woman. Anyway, a group of bikies came along on their motorbikes and he was terrified. And anyway, they came and they were so courteous, respectful, and they fixed his car and he just was overjoyed. And, yeah, so it's a true story. And
wow.
Yeah.
That's lovely, see? So, you know, the bikies are really cool. That's very nice, because sometimes when we judge a person, that we only sort of we get what we see in a person. So that's very beautiful there. The bike is helping out a transvestite. Marvellous. I'll just do the ones from here first of all, then some more from the floor. And it's okay for those of you who need to go to the toilet and leave early, you can always do that. You will not offend me. From Malta. Learning something new is challenging for me. I make a lot of mistakes despite trying not to. I make fun of my mistakes because it helps me relieve the tension. Good. I come across people with different levels of patience, and many said I don't take learning seriously. They seem offended I can't learn quickly. That makes me sad. What can I do with my learning problem and with those impatient teachers? I would say for Malta, you haven't got a learning problem. No, they've got the learning problems. They've got the impatience problems. And I think a good teacher will always encourage their students to learn at their own pace. Because if you force a person to learn too quickly, they get afraid, they get tense, and that's not the way that we can learn. And it's great when you make a lot of mistakes and you make fun of mistakes. That's absolutely brilliant. Because it's the fear of making mistakes which makes you make more mistakes. So you're doing a great job there for Malta. So I think it's your teachers need to listen to these talks from Australia. You understand. You've actually learned a lot about life. Yeah, we make mistakes. When we're afraid of making mistakes, then we don't go forward in life. It was a business leader once told me in Australia that they don't call it mistakes or failure. They call it forward failing. Forward failing, which means you give it a go. Yeah, you fall over, but you do it forward. You learn, you get somewhere, you grow from your mistakes. And just giving that little positive spin, forward failure, rather than just failure, shows that the failure is an important part of making progress in your life. Acknowledge, forgive, learn from the mistakes. Or acknowledge, forgive, laugh, and learn. So that's actually how we grow in life. When we don't make mistakes, or rather we do, but we refuse to admit we do, then we don't learn anything, we don't grow, we don't advance in life. So please, everybody, make mistakes. You're allowed to make mistakes. You're encouraged to make mistakes. I make mistakes all the time. Well, not all the time, but a lot of the time. That was a mistake. You learn from them and you grow from them. And you know when a senior monk, you know, I'm a big shot sometimes in some places these days, when a senior monk makes a mistake, that's really funny. You know, when the Queen of England makes a mistake, that's hilarious. The higher you are, the more laughter you can get from your mistakes. So it's great. So please make a lot of mistakes. It makes the world human. And you don't feel so alone in this world. You know, you, other people, you feel a sense of brotherhood, sisterhood. The brotherhood and sisterhood of those who make mistakes. Welcome to the club. So I think your teachers need to sort of learn how to teach. From the USA, dear Ajahn, I have opened up the door of my heart to my abuser and make jokes about often, but I continue having panic attacks. So I try and pacify my fears, challenge myself to beat the fear, or simply give myself a panic license. You know, that's like saying the grumpy license, the happiness license, the panic license. It really depends on your abuser. If it's physical abuse or continual verbal abuse, then that can be physically and emotionally damaging. It's like a disease. It can sometimes kill you. So I don't know what the type of abuse is. If you can, if it's only light abuse, where making jokes about it and just opening the door of your heart to it, and you find the abuse is lessening, you can bear it. If it is lessening, carry on. But what you're saying here, having panic attacks and having lots of fears, challenging myself, sometimes you may have to learn to put yourself in a different situation where you're not facing that abuser, or even sometimes, you know, calling the police, getting your friends or whatever to get some protection. I can't really answer that question totally from USA. It rings a few bells over there. Open up the door of your heart. There's a to love another person, fine, but there's a Chinese saying which I always try and include when you're talking about compassion, and that Chinese saying is to love the tiger but at a distance. Tigers are dangerous. You can love the tiger, but don't go up to the tiger because it will hurt you or bite you. So your abuser, you can maybe love the abuser, but at a distance, please, so you don't get hurt. And lastly, from Sweden, how to help someone who does not understand the joke or situation and becomes angry or take it personally? This is one of the reasons I gave the talk today, so that people can, you know, develop a greater sense of humour, a sense of lightness, a sense of forgiveness, a sense of giving the other person the benefit of the doubt, the ability to laugh at themselves and not feel so threatened. I think one of the reasons is because sometimes people have been so hurt, you know, by life, they're afraid to laugh. They feel so threatened. They feel so unsafe. It's just like the little kitten who has been abandoned. When you try and help it, it will scratch you. You're trying to help the little being, but it's so afraid. They only know how to hurt. Hopefully, that the person who doesn't understand the joke or situation, with a bit of, they feel a bit safer, a bit more unthreatened, then they can start to laugh at themselves and life a little bit more easily. And they realize they don't need to take it personally. It was never intended that way. And anyway, so I laugh at myself, and I expect other people to laugh at themselves as well, to enjoy the human condition. So that's the best I can do for the someone from Sweden. There was another question over there. Does he still want to ask it, or is it gone? Okay, so there'll be some other questions coming afterwards, I'm sure, the big line afterwards. So it'd be nice to do that. So let's now, it's just gone past 9 o'clock, let's pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. Those who want to stay can stay, those who want to leave can leave.